All right. Well, we'll call the meeting to order for the Thoroughbred Breeding Fund, July 16th, 2013. Members present, myself, Commissioner Albertine, Chair of the Fund, Ed Kelly, Jeff Canizzo, Joe McMahon, Senator Nolan, Senator Howard Nolan, Bill Wilmot, and John Graziano Jr. Also, we have Tracy Egan, as well as Kyle is here, the Fund's counsel. We have a guest, Jim McCormick, from the Jockey Club is here. And so we have a quorum present. First item is approval of the minutes for the meeting of May 8th, 2013. Anybody has a chance to look at the minutes? Entertain a motion on the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's made and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. The next item on the agenda is item three. Approved May year-to-date financials and request for purse enrichment payments. Tracy, you want to elaborate on that?
Sure, I'll ask for about the purse enrichment payments, because in the past, I've always waited on the direction of the board to pay out purse enrichments, and because there had been one of the notions when we were considering the issue of whether we were going to have to pay back any money to NIRA, someone had said, well, maybe do it from purse enrichment. So without further guidance from the board, I'm waiting on guidance from the board as to how much of the purse enrichment, if any, you want me to pay out, since we are halfway through the year. And asked the chairman if he wanted to okay it, and apparently he wants some board input on paying out purse enrichment. So you've had hopefully time to look these up on the board website so that you're familiar with them. Revenue, obviously, were in good shape, largely because of the increase in money from the VLTs. They've really learned how to turn the tap on down at the Resorts World Resort. So our operating revenue is approximately $840,000 higher at this point than it was at this point a year ago. Plus the inclusion of registry and advertising fees offset by lower handle and breakage, $410,000 lower handle, $111,000 less in breakage, but still because of the increase in revenue largely from the VLTs, we are in good shape. And when you're looking at the financials and you'll look at the NIRA figure, the NIRA revenue figure, you'll note that it is lower this year than it was last year because last year they were still paying us and they hadn't begun the proration process and the process of paying at what they now believe to be the proper rate from the upstate simulcast signals. Expenses this year are higher in 2013 by $1.1 million. That's primarily owing to the 2013 accrual of purse enrichment plus higher expense award. Breeder, stallion, and owner awards are up 78,000 breeders, 106,000 stallion, and 220,000 owner. Now, most startling thing about that is the increase in the owner awards by 64%. And that's attributable to the increased number of open races that New York breds are running in. Plus, if you look at the entries at Finger Lakes on any given day, very often the whole card will be open company races but filled with New York breds. So they're all treated like open company owners. And also, in the first quarter of the year when we lost to weather and they decided that NIRA should have fewer racing days, there was an attempt to get more horses and races, so they were riding conditions where New York breds, if they wanted to run in the winter, they needed to run in open company. So that's in large part what's happening with the owner's awards. Excluding items which are not comparable from year to year, for example, the rent and the registry fees, because we haven't been paying rent here, and the registry fees in the past were considered an offset to the cost of the registry. but the state controller asked us to put those above the line and treat them as regular revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you see the difference in the registry and advertising fees. Both the web ads and the registration fees are now considered above the line. So we keep, in essence, 11 cents on the dollar for the fund, promotion, and administration. The rest is treated, you know, as regular revenue. So, you know, 2% of every dollar that comes that way goes to Cornell, and the rest goes to awards.
Okay. So
I thought people might want to look further, look at our financial position on page 2 of the financial analysis. Our cash balance is $3.4 million, slightly lower than last year by about $700,000. I guess that's slight. You have such a big budget. That's mainly because through May of 2013, we have paid out $6.1 million in awards versus through May of 2012, we only paid $5.6 million. And that's largely because last April at the NYTB Awards dinner, Bill Wilmot came up to me and Christine Frucci and said, the breeders want their money sooner. They wanted to put that money back into the economy of New York State a lot sooner. So we hunkered down, and we got it done. But anyway, so that don't be alarmed by the difference in the cash sitting around. The cash is now out in the economy.
Right.
Buying hay and paying feed bills. Bottom of page 5, accounts receivable. The very bottom of the page, accounts receivable. That $1.1 million is comparable to last year. It's only off lower than last year by about $32,000. You can see that in the third column over. On page 6, almost at the bottom, your total accounts payable. That $1.4 million balance is about $1.2 million lower, which again reflects the earlier payout of second period awards. Like last year we did it, and this year we did it by May 1st. Last year it wasn't done until June. So that's why you see that account being off by that much. On page 7, about the middle of the page, the 210 account, that awards payable account. And you'll notice in 2012 there was $200,000 sitting there. At one point there was about $260,000 there, and now it's down to $35,000. That's comprised of $26,000 related to a DQ on New York Bred Showcase Day. I'm sorry, no, it was the New York Stallion Series race last November. And through a series of, somebody was not present at NYRA when they were getting the entries for the race, and that person didn't know to check to see whether the horses, all the horses running in the race were eligible and paid their nominations to the New York Stallion Series. So a horse finished first and third, and neither one of them had been actually nominated to the New York Stallion Series. So they both got DQ'd, so we had to redo our awards. And as of last week, since we sent out the award checks, this has been corrected. But what you're looking at here is a snapshot in time.
Question.
Yep.
On those awards, that this wasn't discovered until after the awards went out.
That's
last
correct.
Fall. So the Breeders' Awards that went out and the Stallion Award with those two horses,
mm-hmm.
was that recovered?
Yes. Well, the way we recovered it is the people who, you know, stood the Stallion out of their next check from us, we did it as a lump sum.
Yeah.
And is that showing in here, Christine?
No, because that's after May.
Okay.
Yes, we did recover the money, all except the last one, $900 still owed, but yes, it's been recovered.
Yeah, they had other awards coming to them, so,
mm-hmm. So
we just deducted it off what we paid out.
Okay.
And that additional $900, that'll be recovered the same?
As soon as they earn another award.
The same way?
Yep.
All right, anybody else have?
I have not a specific question. These reports are very good, and the synopsis and the comparison was very good. And we're comparing it against last year, which is great. We need to compare it against our budget. So I'd like to, you know, moving forward, look at where we are versus
On this front page, we do have comparison year to date. Because what happened when we were doing it in the first quarter, it looked like such a quirky picture because of the way the year plays out. Like, we made a chart up for Jeff, and it shows, like, the awards starting out in the beginning of the year like this, and then they go in a peak, and then
I certainly understand that. But as we get closer, if we're going to adjust things, we need to know what we budgeted for. We need to really
just
focus
have both.
Well, you know, it is on here. Is our budget broken down more than... How broken down is our budget?
I don't know what you mean by broken down.
In terms of the line items. You know, we have a pretty detailed chart of account here. So how broken down is our budget, actually?
Okay, now just to clarify, this page one is a summary of the actual thing. Now, there's not budget information on page one. This is all actual.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Sorry. It's good.
As far as budget,
right.
Last year the process was working up the budget by line items.
Right.
However, then we threw that out and we said just take 5%, 6%, done. We don't really have a good, at least in my mind, a good line item in order to compare it to be meaningful.
When you operate by a budget, those are the goals you need to meet or adjust.
Well, that's what they didn't like the last time we presented the budget, was because the first quarter of the year is so peculiar and that there's such a small drawdown on our money.
Well, we can talk about it outside. Yeah. I think moving forward.
Sounds like somebody wants to be on an audit committee.
I think both, I see your point, Dan, both. But I think I can answer your question, too, is that these line items you see here are the budget line item. Those are the percentages by in statute and whatnot.
No, I understand, but there's no numbers.
No.
So but we're going to meet our revenue. You know, listen, we're not going to meet our revenue. We need to adjust our expenses.
Yeah. Right. We need to know that sooner rather than later.
Exactly.
We're ahead on revenue from what we projected.
How close can we get to an actual standing on what our budget is and where we stand as a month meeting or a quarter or whatever?
Well, it's almost like we'll have to do, because it all won't fit on one page, we can just bring you another page that shows what was projected in the budget and how we stand to it. Yeah. I mean, the budget has always been something that's done fairly loosely here, almost usually mimics the previous year. As if everything will be the same, except that we usually project handle will be down, because sadly that's where the business is going.
Yep.
And the VLT revenue is something that, you know, certainly keeping us afloat now, hopefully while horse racing figures out how to reinvent itself as a sport that appeals to more people, and a wagering event that appeals to more people.
I think what we've done is we've established a budget based on last year and then adjusted the budget, usually by mid-year or the latter part of the year, to reflect the reality that we've experienced. I think that's been the trend over the last few years.
Did you want to add anything?
I think it's probably a good discussion for the audit committee.
So I guess maybe we just wait a minute, I think. Senator will be right back. We'll entertain a motion. To accept.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Canizzo second.
You're second. I second, sure.
Graziano made the motion. Canizzo seconded.
All right, we're voting on that now. We're going to wait for the senator.
Well, I'm just going to wait for the senator.
Yeah,
and then I had a question on the revenue, the handle revenue. It's just a... just for informational purposes. How many days racing are you talking about here? MYR, it's off 336,000. How many days racing you compared one year to the other?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the beginning of your question.
MYR is handle revenue. And I'm looking at page 207 here. The handle revenue.
Down 336,000, I think.
MYR down 336,000. My question is, based on how many days racing year comparison to year comparison are we at that?
I think there were 13 fewer days of racing this year.
So 13 fewer days of racing, and the average handle per day, I mean, I'm just trying to look at this, if we're really losing money or if we're losing, if it's because we lost days, this is my question.
Well, handle revenue also is going to be down because it reflects the fact that we no longer receive, proration is now taken out of...
Well,
simulcasting.
Proration is a very small amount of this money. So
well, it's about $600,000 a year is costing us.
But Tracy, if we've got, you said we've had 13 fewer days of racing, and we're showing a 300.
Well, that's from weather, and that's from weather, and also when they decided to have fewer racing days to be safer.
I know that. I'm trying to say, how much money per day, I guess is a simple way to say, how much money per day are we losing the same amount of money if it was last year and we had those 13 days of racing, would we be plus 336,000? Would we be even? Would we?
I would go to me to do the study, I would have to go back to 2012 to the same dates, you know, not necessarily the date, but like the Wednesday of January, the Thursday of January, see what the handle was then, and then
I think you're missing my point. Right. If we, for the period that we're talking about, if we had 30 days of racing this year as opposed to 40 days of racing last year, what was the average per day? That's shouldn't have been done.
Would that 13 days represent 22%?
That's what I'm saying.
No, it would not represent 22%. Part of that is an actual fall off in handle. Part of that is because they're paying us less.
Do we know how much? That was my following question, is how much of that is due to proration?
Page 1 of 2, she's mentioned that 229,000 revenues to discontinued.
So 229,000 out of the 336 is due to proration?
Okay. That's disproportionate, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's totally disproportionate. That doesn't seem possible. I mean, if you're talking about losing 13 days of racing,
we're talking about this proration change in how NIRA calculates it. So for January to April, 229,000 was included in last year's values, which are not recoverable this year. So 229 of the 336 is attributable to that proration.
So it's significant. If that's the case, it's almost all that money.
So that means handle wasn't down at all.
No, you
had 13 fewer days, and your handle was only down $100,000 is what that says to me. Am I following this right?
Okay.
So the handle isn't down at all. The handle is up. The proration has changed this thing. If you were strictly talking on days racing, your handle would be up considerably.
Yeah, Joe, the 220-some-thousand of $1,000,001 is 20-some percent.
Yeah.
I mean, proration can't be 20%.
Can't be.
It's about $600,000 a year less revenue we'll get from NIRA because of the new way they compute proration and the payments to us from the simulcast.
But that's only as when they identified the problem. That's not who was looking back, right?
No, that's like this year, if you're going to look at a portion of revenue that we're not going to get anymore, it's going to be about $600,000 because of that.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's because, explain me how you get that $600,000.
Taking all of NIRA's handle revenue to the fund, which is what? Do you know that number? Okay, so taking NIRA's total handle revenue to the fund, which is $2 million, you're saying that $600,000 of it is less. Yeah.
That's over the whole year.
For the whole year.
Right, but $600,000 of what, $2 million?
$3 million.
$3 million.
So what percentage of that? That's proration is not. That's percentage is way out of whack.
Yeah. That's not. Something doesn't seem to add up here.
Well, in the first few months of this year, there was proration. In the first 4 months of last year, there wasn't. So we were still getting that revenue.
I guess, it doesn't appear to me that proration could account for that big of a loss is what my question is.
For 22%.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you're talking about 300.
I think when you back out the proration, I don't know the figures here, but I think it's like a 6% decline for the first part of the year. But as the year goes on, it should be less of a decline because handle goes up so much, you know, June through October.
Yeah, isn't proration a certain percentage?
It's a percentage.
Of every percentage
that they'd be able to keep. They're not
every month they when they send us their revenue, they didn't used to. They at first they started just sending us less money, and we would go over their figures to us, and you couldn't figure out why it was less. And that, well, we're doing proration, but it was like a mystery because they wouldn't show us the math. They finally have started showing us on occasion the math. But it's very complicated because every state has different rules, and they're supposed to accommodate the different rules in those states that we get handle from. But when we get our paperwork from NIRA, our glimpse inside what they're doing as far as proration, it looks like a steady rate, and like 0.0039. And maybe we should be getting 0.0041, but I don't have the wherewithal to look at all the other states' legislation to see what are they supposed to consider first before they decide the revenue split.
They obviously have that because they're doing it.
So yeah, they have a fleet of accountants.
No, this is the whole, getting back to the whole other issue is, you know.
Exactly.
They need to tell us, and we need to figure it out. I want to make sure they're not trying to recoup past money, too. I mean, it just seems like an out of your right.
But that 6% would hold true. You're talking about this first quarter for the rest of the year. You said it's 600,000. So 600,000 is roughly 6% of that $3 million figure. So
600,000.
Well, no, it's
20%.
Yeah.
Well, I think
so,
our
number. It's still there. It's
fair. It's just look at round numbers. It's wrong by a lot.
At the end of the year.
Right.
You're towards
right.
The end of race season.
Right. Yeah. And that, there's no way possible that it's 20%.
No way.
No way.
No way.
So 6% actually would.
Yeah, that's where it should.
It would, you know, so if I was. And
well,
I was, you know,
the way it was explained to me that when we did this was that in this for the. Because up until May, they paid us at the regular rate. This year, they haven't paid us at the regular rate. So about 6% is actually a decline in handle, which I think sounds reasonable considering that, well, for example, in the month of June, the daily average of handle was up, but it was sleight of hand because they had fewer race days. The total amount of handle the month of June went down, like by 1.1%.
But we can't. Nationwide. You can't make a broad statement and say that racing is losing appeal when you're talking about losing days like that. That's what started the whole discussion.
Oh, okay.
Because you said that until racing gets over its funk.
Well,
and my question is, racing is not in a funk. The handle is going up.
The study that the Jockey Club Roundtable presented last year showed that every year handle is going down.
We need to get that information, so we're not going to get it by talking about it, but
right.
Let's direct us to
okay, let's back this up a little bit.
Yep.
We've got a motion on the floor that's been seconded to accept this. Okay, so this is on the motion to accept the...
your motion.
You know, based on those questions, you send my motion and make it contingent upon us getting the additional information.
I agree with the second of what you just said.
So you want to withdraw your second? You want to withdraw the motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and I'll certainly amend the motion that, or make a new motion to ask that we find out from NIRA exactly what they're paying us and have a more detailed report so that we understand the numbers.
So, for the sake of clarity then, what we want is item 400 on this budget. To
handle revenue.
Handle revenue.
We want some explanation on that.
Okay, you want a detailed explanation as to
why
whether the 22.54 is correct for the first 4 months, 5 months of the year.
We want an explanation as to why it's down 22%, $336,000. How that was calculated.
Is yes, that and how what we can expect in the future, how they're going to report
right.
It. So we
my point is that it has to be, it can't just be from this pro rata, whatever. It can't all be from that. Not if you've got 13 days to do a race besides. There's something that's not accurate.
Reconciled there.
And so I mean, I would accept the report.
Excluding that line.
With an exclusion on the 400 line.
Make a motion.
No, you made it. It's a motion.
So we don't have a motion on the floor. Does somebody want to offer a motion that we accept the that we accept the report, the financial report, but for the handle?
Subject to a clarification.
Yes.
From the NARA handle.
You want me to make that? Sure, I'll make that motion that we accept this financial subject to item 400, which we need a clarification on.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Also, purse enrichment, what we have. We have budgeted $1.5 million purse enrichment, and do you want the fund to send out half that money now? Because we haven't sent any of it out yet. It's the board's decision.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Just first question. In page one of this, it says that we paid year-to-date $625,000. Is that just an accrual?
Yeah, that's an accrual. All
right, but it hasn't
gone out. By doing it, you know.
By month.
Correct.
So that lowers it more.
Well, that means every month that we split up the $1.5 million over 12 months. Okay. So through May, the $625,000 that has been accrued.
Okay. So you're saying we need a motion to get?
In the past, someone has always told me whether to pay that or not, especially this year since someone suggested paying.
The policy has always been that this is a budget item that was approved last year.
Right.
In September.
Right.
We approved it last September. And what has always happened since then has been that, you know, as long as I've been on the audit committee or on the board, is that the audit committee signs the check, reviews the money of where it's going to. We usually do that around the 1st of June, and that's what we've always done. This year we're about 6 weeks late on that. So
it's not a
board decision. However, it's nice to get some. Because the audit committee is one person, I'm glad to get the support of the board on this thing for us.
Well, I think sign the check. I think part of, and I'm not sure about this, but we have this open issue with NIRA and what's the back and forth with NIRA. So I'm not sure if that's a component of whether, you know, the board wants to approve the person enrichment, the money's flowing to NIRA while NIRA's making demands on the fund. So I assume that they're part and parcel of the same thing.
So we need a discussion about that.
I mean, I don't know.
I think get into that.
What Tracy's asking for is board approval for something I believe we've already approved through the budget.
That's right. I would say so too.
We can have a separate discussion on NIRA, right. But we're not going to let that creep into the question that's here at hand in front of us, which is, do we need to give Tracy approval? I don't believe we do. I think, Tracy, you have that approval with the passage of the budget.
Someone suggested that purse enrichment this time be used possibly to pay NIRA. And so I want clear direction from the board. Shall I pay out the $625,000 accrued through May or add on to it the amount through the end of June and pay that out? 60% will go to Finger Lakes, 40% will go to NIRA.
I think, just to be clear, just that I think that informationally, all you need to do is just tell the board that this is what you're going to do. It's already been approved.
Okay.
You've done that informationally. You don't need a board order to authorize it. And I think you certainly don't need a board resolution on that because it's already been pre-approved. So.
All right. They're going to get their purse enrichment.
So if we could... any more discussion on that particular issue?
I agree. I just feel that we made the decision last September that the money should be spent in such a way, and even though we have another issue which, in the spirit of things, seems to be related, it's technically, they're not connected. So we should pay it. Showing good faith and taking high moral ground. However, at some point in the future, they will be connected, I would be willing to predict, because we have to come to some kind of understanding. I think the only discretionary item that we have is purse enrichment. The rest of it can be tweaked, but we have to pay breeders' awards, et cetera, et cetera. we do not have to pay person enrichment, but we agreed to pay it last year, and we should honor what we said. Going forward, that's where the discussion should be, in my opinion. So that's
okay.
All.
So with no further discussion on that, if we could drop down to item six, just to try to expedite the meeting, move things along. Jeff?
Sure. There's a printout in here for you guys. This report covers just the last 2 months since our last meeting, May and June. NYTB has been executing our promotional contract with the fund. In doing so, we've published the last 2 months' editions of the New York Reader, which is our national publication. We've worked with our electronic newsletter, which I'm proud to report has grown to an amazing figure of 5,000 recipients. And I like to remind myself every time here that 5 years ago that list was less than 100 people. So it's significant, and it shows the interest that people have in the New York Reading Program on a weekly basis. We've continued our work with the web promotional website, nytreaders.org, and purchasing racing-related, sales-related data and statistics, and as well as writing original journalism relevant to New York Red Racing, breeding, and sales, including win photos, 200 race replays, and all kinds of statistics, as you know. Anyone who's visited the website. Page two. We began the efforts, and actually have already sent out invitations for our sales cocktail party, which has been completely revamped again this year, and I'm happy to say so, that this party will be go on the entire evening of the sale instead of being an hour-long event. Basic Tipton has allowed us to utilize the upstairs buyer's lounge at the sales pavilion, which has historically been a private area for people that buy horses. They've given it to NYTB for the entire evening to utilize for the party that we're planning. So I'm expecting it to be a good thing and an improved party. I can tell you that already, as of today, with roughly a month out, there's over 100 people that have already RSVP'd. So it's I'm expecting to have a great turnout, which I think will actually dictate into telling us how the sale is going to go for the summer as well. So we have good expectations for August 10th, which is the date of this party and the first night of the New York Red sale. We're also planning our Breeders' annual meeting for that morning, just so you know, which will be held in the same area as Tipton. We've been doing a lot of work with Saratoga 150 celebration, which is, I'm sure everyone here is well familiar with. We're a founding member and a part of the foundation that's putting on the entire summer's events and all of our breeding-related events that are wrapped into their 150 celebration as well. So we're getting significant advertising and promotion for breeding industry there. Take two was the program we talked about, I believe, last meeting. We've talked about many times, but over the course of the last 2 months, there were horse shows that have taken place that money was distributed to thoroughbreds at Skidmore's College Classic Horse Show, which was in June, and also at the Hitsaw Show, which is the end of May and beginning of June, both double-A-rated horse shows where we're promoting the use of thoroughbreds in them for retirement purposes. Off track, anyways, and it's taken a significant jump, and it's a national program now. And those two horse shows actually had the largest turnout that they've had in thoroughbred divisions ever, which I think is a very good thing. And it started to take some progression. And I can tell you, I was there at both events, and every single person that was involved was thankful that this program is in place. People want to have thoroughbreds that are in the hunter-jumper world. So this is an incentive to hopefully help with the second careers of New York breds specifically. We've just opened our booth at Saratoga Racecourse, which we have every year. Sunday was open house, which we had it running and going, and man, this actually goes back to the sale, is that Fasig Tipton gave me a box of 50 sales catalog come in the box. And we put two boxes out at that sales thing. They're all gone. One day open house. So that's, I think we used to go through a box over the course of a month, and they're all gone that first day. I don't know if that means anything, but I took it as a good message that perhaps this could be a good summer for the open house. So that's a recap of the last 2 months since we met, and my TV-related activities. Not related to our promotional contract, NYPB was involved with the legislative session, and there were two bills that were actually signed by the governor last week, that are relevant to the fund, as I believe everyone should be well aware of. One was related to FIRST enrichment going forward next year. The FIRST money that the fund distributes to both Finger Lakes and Naira, rather than it being singled out for restricted races only, the track can now distribute it essentially to a New York bred in any race, the way that the law reads. And the theory and the thought was, as again, many of you are well aware, is that now Naira would be able to utilize the money that we're giving them in a better fashion, essentially a bigger bang for the fund's buck, if we were to put in place an additional type of owner's award or add additional Stallion Series races with fund purse money. To do that, obviously, we're going to need fund management staff and the board and Naira's counterparts to come together and put together a plan on how we want to do this and utilize it. But that law has been changed. Second law that was changed that's very important is the caps. For the fourth year in a row, the cap on breeders' awards has been increased to up to 65% from up to 50%, which of course allows the fund to distribute advertised rates of awards to breeders, and that again was signed by the governor. And the last piece I'll mention, part of the gaming legislation included something that's been in discussion in the works for a long, long time. And that's ADW, or automated deposit wagering.
Is it automated or advanced?
Advanced, automated, take your pick, depending on who's writing the report. Internet wagering and phone wagering for private companies. The three largest groups are TBG, Twin Spires, and ExpressBet. They're out-of-state companies that take wagers on any racetrack that has a simulcast contract with them. It's the largest growing segment of the racing industry in terms of handle that we're just talking about. They actually account for over roughly a quarter of all the handle in the United States today. The fund has never received a dollar out of any type of simulcasting arrangement that Naira has. And so somebody that took a wager at Churchill Downs on a race at Naira, the fund does not receive a penny of that wager. If someone that is on twinspires.com takes a wager on a Naira race, the fund never received a dollar out of that wager. Well, starting in January, fund will receive a percentage of any wager taken by a New York State resident that has an account with any out-of-state ADW. So the three companies I was talking about. If you're a New York State resident and you wager through one of those platforms, you pay into the system the same way that other bets are paid into the system. It's a significant accomplishment, and I think that it will be beneficial for the fund. The dollar figures associated with this, there's been a few different studies done, but the state did a study a year ago, then they thought the pool of money available in this was roughly $200 million, of which 5% is divided amongst the industry. If that was the figure that we're going to go by, that would mean roughly $600,000 in new revenue to fund next year. There's been industry studies that have stated that that figure is much higher than $200 million, to the point of which almost doubled that $400 million. So if that was the case, we're talking about over $1 million for the fund of new revenue next year, $4.2 million. So it's roughly going to be somewhere within that range, I believe. And again, this is new. This will be new revenue for the fund going forward. And essentially, we're attached to the growth part of it.
Was this through legislation? Or
This was through legislation. It was in the economic, I forget the long term of it, the gaming bill that was put forward, that the governor has yet to sign, but is in his.
Will that happen whether or not there's a...
That will happen whether or not there is casinos, yes. If the referendum was to fail, that language still moves forward. That's my report.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff. Any more questions, discussions with Jeff on the report? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept a proposal to cover these promotional events.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. All right, the next item on the agenda is the scholarship winners. As you all recall, we approved $15,000 last year for six scholarships. Tracy, you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Oh, sure. We have another group of great students, six of them, two each from Cobleskill, Cornell, and Morrisville State College. From Cobleskill, we have Paige Montaigne of Boston Spa. She is spending her third summer at Saratoga Racetrack as an assistant trainer to someone who also graduated from Cobleskill and Cornell, Chad Brown, who is one of the leading trainers in the nation. So it's really great that one of our graduates is reaching out to another graduate and recognizing quality and giving her that step up. Also from Cobleskill, Merritt Mulhern of Hyde Park. She showed enough dedication in just two semesters at Cobleskill to earn a 3.9-point grade average. She's shown off her horse skills in horse shows over there, and they feel she's very deserving of a scholarship. And this summer she's working at Meadowview Farm in Canajoharie, and she tells me she just loves working with the mares and the foals. From Cornell University, Lauren Jacobs and Kaylin Spatney will be using their scholarships to become equine veterinarians. Lauren is from Poquag. She's got a 3.9 grade point average, and she wants to work either with a racetrack or a breeding farm when she finishes vet school. Kayla Spatney from Setauket, New York, also has an impressive grade point average. She rides thoroughbreds, and she works in the orthopedics lab at Cornell. She loves research as well as caring for horses, which she did recently at a place here in the Capital Region, the Oakencroft Equine Clinic. And her love for animals became focused on becoming a veterinarian when she worked with the Cornell Cooperative Extension near her hometown to help people become better pet owners. Morrisville College has selected third-year student Hannah Hoskins and second-year student Danica Rose Cochran to receive scholarships. We've got pictures of they instead of sending me portraits, they sent me pictures of themselves with horses, of course. Danica is a student at Morrisville's Thoroughbred Equine Racing Management Program. She wants to become a trainer, and so she sent us a picture of herself with an off-track thoroughbred named Mossy Oak, and that horse came to Morrisville out of the Finger Lakes adoption program, and Morrisville is just so dedicated to creating a workforce for the equine industry, so it's great, the candidates that they send us.
All right. Does anybody have any questions or comments on the young people we've chosen? That have been chosen. If not, I need a motion to accept that.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. The next thing on the agenda is creation of the audit committee. Certainly open for discussion if there needs to be more discussion on it. I think we discussed it last time around.
My thought on it, traditionally it's been three people. Joe has been on it for a long time. if I were suddenly wearing the wizard's hat, I would have Joe be the head of it, and I would pick from one of three for the other two spots. Jeff, who's very close to all the numbers stuff, John Graziano, who's a good numbers guy, and Senator Nolan, who is our senior member of the board. I would pick two of those three people to be on the board. I'm not a numbers guy, and that's why I spoke up. So I would rather not be on the audit.
A lot of people speak up so they don't get nominated.
That's right. Exactly. So that's my opinion right there.
Well, I thank you very much, Bill, for including me as one, but I don't spend a lot of time in New York State, so I think it'd be better if, exactly.
That looked like a lot like a motion to me. So yeah. If you want to put that in the form of a motion.
I make a motion that we form the audit committee consisting of Joe McMahon as the chair and John Graziano and Jeff Canizzo as the two members.
Second.
Any discussion?
Not opposed to abandoning these, but just a question, Jeff, can you sit on that legally? Because you receive quite a few bucks in there.
Well, so I have to kind of go back to the ethics opinion that was written back in 1995. And the ethics opinion addresses the fact that this board was somewhat unique in that six of the members of this board, by design, can sometimes be in an inherent conflict of interest situation when it comes to, you know, receiving an award, plus you're voting, you know, you're voting on, you know, what the award should be, or you have a contract with the fund and you may be in a position of, you know, being on both sides of it. And I think that ethics opinion sort of said, look, there's no inherent conflict. There may be times when you may need to recuse yourself from consideration of a particular item. And you know that from when you make proposals relative to NYTB and its contract with the fund. You have to recuse yourself and all that. The question becomes whether or not you're sitting on the audit committee raises those kinds of issues. Now, the function of the audit committee is the audit committee itself doesn't have any power. As I understand it, the audit committee, its job is to make recommendations to the full board on all matters financial. So I would say that to the extent that issues come up, if you are to be on the audit committee, to the extent that there are issues that come before the audit committee that directly impact NYTB, you would have to recuse yourself. Now, whether or not that's going to happen so much that it would be sort of disabling, that's kind of the issue. Because if it happens periodically, you can just manage that. If it's one of those things that's going to happen frequently, then it becomes a bit of an issue. I've never actually participated in the audit committee meetings. Joe, do you know how frequently the MITB issues come up on audit committee meetings?
They really don't. Our work primarily is you know, the whole budget. Take a look at that. The other things that come up is the review of the audits that we have done, either the outside audit we have done, or, you know, to identify the problems in that and point them out to the board as okay. as issues. So that's really the scope of our work. There's not, we don't set rates or anything like that.
Do you make recommendations to the full board as to NYTB, you know, MITB's?
It's always been very much done between the executive director and the director of the breeders. And, again, it's only a recommendation that the committee ever brings to the fund board.
In my opinion, there's no legal prohibition on him serving on the audit committee. You just have to keep in mind that if issues come before the audit committee that relate directly to MITB, you're going to have to recuse yourself.
I mean, those are the same principles that apply to me sitting in this seat right now. So.
So, on the motion on the floor to create the audit committee, Joe as chair, John, Jeff to serve on the committee with Joe. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. All right. So with that, if we could skip back up to item four on the agenda, and that would be your cue.
Hi, my name is Jim McCormick. I'm from the Jockey Club Information System in Lexington. The Jockey Club, just a brief overview of my company. The Jockey Club Information System is a for-profit company owned by the Jockey Club, which is, as you know, the nonprofit that is there primarily for the registration of thoroughbreds in North America, in the United States. I only mention that to say that although we're a for-profit company, anything that we do ultimately is handed back to our parent, who in turn is out there for the good of the thoroughbred. Our area of expertise is thoroughbreds, although we do work in generally on horses. If you want information about thoroughbreds, more than likely you'll be doing business with us in some fashion. Even our competitors buy their data from us and then compete with us, but that's just how it goes. We have been working with the fund for 25 years, at least, on the system that is used to track the registration and the awards that are given out by the fund. Over time, the system has been upgraded, but essentially you're still using the system that was designed in 1988. And as I said, you have made some improvements, but for the most part, you're having to deal with a program that has really reached its useful life many years ago, and you're still running it. As I've been working with Tracy and Christine over the past few years, we have really pushed the idea of it would be time to move forward with the software that you have into something else. What we're proposing is that, like any building that you're going to create, software is designed first and then built. What is needed is a design that will effectively describe all the features and functionalities, as well as at that point knowing what it will take to actually build this. We're proposing that a plan needs to be created, a design plan to architect this new software. The document I put together for you first is in two parts. The first part is the actual overview, and this is the overview of the current system, because it's important to remember that the current system is essentially the functions that you're doing. What's not in the current system is some of the transparencies that people are now expecting from the point of registration through the point of the creation of the the 1099, so that they know where the money came from, how the, they get a check, but how did you get to that information, and what steps were gone through before you got there. We have some more, some additional this, and I won't just drop it because we don't want to do that, but these are some additional appendixes. And essentially, this is the easy part. This is the meat of the program. These are examples of reports, screens, database layout. Now, the reason we did not make more of these is, number one, it's 140 pages. And number two, it also has confidential information. As a board, it's have a look, but we'll be gathering these back up and actually shredding them when we're done, because it does show some of the sample reports that the system currently generates that do have some personal information on it that we don't want to just let out. The program that you've got works, but to use it is taking a lot of time on the funds, the staff of the fund. You've got Adam, who works with the program on a day in, day out basis. He is just a wonderful person. He understands how this thing works. You'd have difficulty if Adam was to take an extended vacation as far as getting checks out and things like that. It is not necessarily a user-friendly program. And those are some of the things that we want to kind of go over and move forward with. The last two pages, and this is the wild card aspect of creating software. We know what the system does today, but the question really is, what do you want it to do? And we've had some discussion with Tracy and her staff about, the wish list of what we'd like to see in a new version of program. There are still some conversations that have to occur to flesh out those items to understand, number one, are we talking about something that's easy, middle, or hard? Number two, how much time it might take to build that, and then decide, do we really want that feature? So there's some time that we're going to have to go through. Even if you were to okay this today, it's not a case of Jockey Club Information System going out and spending the next 500 hours developing a plan. We need time from the staff. Potentially we need time from the IT personnel from New York State to make sure that we're following the regulations that may be appropriate for the storage of data that has confidential information and what our options might be there. But more important, we do need a lot of time on the fund staff to be able to get through and build a plan and come up with an architectural design that says, here's what the program's going to do. The deliverable for this would be a group of reports, samples, screen samples, descriptions of how the program would work, so that a developer could take that plan, much like a builder could take a set of blueprints, and go out and build a piece of software. You don't want to do this by saying, take what we got and we'll figure out what we want to add to it. Ultimately, that's going to cost you two or three times more than it would by not having a firm plan in place that everyone agrees to before you start writing the first bit of code. Any questions?
Okay, Jim. I just had a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. What if we were to go in this direction, what would be the turnaround time to getting a plan in place?
The plan, I believe, based on the current resources that we have available, could be done by the end of the year. It could actually be possibly done sooner, but until I sit down with a resource planner, I couldn't really say absolutely it would be October 15th, November 15th, whatever. But it's safe to say by the end of the year.
I just had one more question. Obviously, you haven't. This isn't your first time.
No.
I mean, you've done this before. Once your plan is in place, say we use January 1 as a mock date mm-hmm. to start. How long would it take typically to get to the point where we're able to use the new system? My question really is, would it be ready for next year?
It would be ready for a part of next year. Unless you are asking for something that is very, very extreme in the core version of the system. Because the core version is, what does it have to do to get just registrations in and checks out? There are other features that could be added on after the fact. There's no doubt you could start using the system at some point next year. Now, it may not be till the third or fourth quarter, but I see no reason that at least the core functions couldn't be done.
So there should be an expectation that at some point next year we'd be able to utilize this system?
To some degree.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I sound like I'm being defensive, but until you have the plan.
No, I understand, yeah. But I'm just using January 1 as kind of an arbitrary date.
Yeah.
Would it be feasible to get the plan?
Is this a fixed dollar contract, or is this an?
No, this is an up to. Where appropriate, we spend time. We're the kind of company that we will do what is needed to be done, and just because it says 50,000 doesn't mean it's 50,000. It would be up to. We also, if we're this close and we weren't finished, typically we're the kind that just gets it done. If we're just short some hours and getting something done. Well, but if it doesn't take that much, we wouldn't be billing that much.
What happens down the road if we see that we need something in addition to help us
you'd be
get
given
to a final product that we want? Is that another dollar rate, or is that an hourly rate, or what?
That, well, this product that you'd be buying today mm-hmm. is the plan. Now, there's a great statement, which is, where were you when the page was empty? Well, with software, it's where were you when the screen was blank? Very often, you can't appreciate what you've asked for until you start seeing it. Yeah. And then you start saying, you know, we didn't think about this before, but what if? Those would be estimated on a time and material basis. That is to say, if you realize you wanted another feature, we would look to see, can it be easily implemented, or is it going to be another 100, 50, whatever the number of hours, and work from that. It's hard to say. It depends on what the feature is. If the feature is something that's simple, we typically just get it in. If it's something that requires architectural change or additional coding modules, then it's just by the hour.
Joel?
A couple of questions.
Yes.
First off, does the Jockey Club do this for other breeding states? I mean, you've got Pennsylvania,
yes.
You've got Ontario, yeah,
we work with California. A number of different states on different areas. In some cases, we only provide data. In Kentucky, we do a lot of the registration process, both with the state and the Racing Commission, and with the KTOB. They're using our systems.
So our system that you're proposing here, this would be both a registration system and
awards.
A tool that would produce the award check or produce the amounts of the awards?
Potentially, and I'll qualify that registration step. We keep track of the registrations because the horse information has to be entered into the system to facilitate the awards being paid. How far that goes is one of the areas that have to be determined to say, are you doing this registration process completely online so that the customer service aspect is maintained, so that you want to do it at 3 in the morning, you can register your horse and have it done. That's the area where we have to determine how far the system is going to go.
So,
but potentially it could be.
It could be.
Yeah.
But are we contracting for that?
You're contracting for the plan. The plan will in turn have the description of what it will do entirely, step one to step Z.
So at the root of the question, registration, mm-hmm. is because New York pays these large awards, we have a pretty stringent set of qualifications,
yes.
for registration. And I wondered about the checks and balances in that.
Typically, a registration process really is a data collection process.
Yeah.
It still doesn't mean you're registered until the information is then validated by the fund to agree that the checks and balances have been met and that horse actually is appropriate to be included.
Okay, so we would still have to approve. I guess would be the word.
That is a good word, yes. You'd still have to validate that.
You have to validate.
That is accepted, and it can now be used for award calculations.
And just one other question.
Yes, sir.
On statistics, say that we wanted to, in the middle of the year, mm-hmm. we wanted to see how many horses were winning $4,000 claiming races and how many horses are winning $50,000 claiming mm-hmm. races. Are we going to be able to get that information? Were you going to be able to, be able to forecast, by virtue of what we've already seen?
It's based.
Be able to get that,
well, you're getting
quickly?
Data. You're getting data now.
I know.
Whether or not you can manipulate that data, there's two approaches to getting reports out of the system. Number one is you ask someone to write the report, which means you have to tell us all ahead of time what it is you want. Which that's the where we the page with blank thing. There's also a report writer capability that is a tool that typically can be used by users, not necessarily programs, but users, that says, look at racing, look at this purse value, look at that, and then generate a report. So if a report writer module is included, very easily it could be done.
So that would serve almost as an actuary. What I'm getting at is we have X number of dollars. We want to know what our rate's going to be
yes.
how much money we're going to be able to do if we change the rate.
Yeah,
you'll be able to do that. That's always been a
issue which we found very useful, and it's very hard. You always have a person in the office who just did it.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult.
The system now...
So that'll do that?
The system now does have the capability, but the capability was based on previous versions of the software that said, here's how the rules are. So to do it in today's environment is more difficult. We already recognize that we need, and we call it the what-ifs, that we need to handle the what-ifs, which is essentially what you're describing. So that actually is part of this without the necessity of a report writer, but those kinds of things it can do. But if you're looking for just an ad hoc report that says what's going on with racing, yeah, some of that could be done.
No, I think that the board over the years has always, you know, if we have a discussion about changing the awards percentages, the mm-hmm. award amounts, we always fall back to, do we have it in this category?
Yeah.
What's the impact likely to be? And it's always a guessing game, mm-hmm. you know, to some extent. But we'd like it to be a more easily attainable educational guess.
Yes.
Our educated guess, I think. So you're saying that you think this system would have some of that built into it?
Because this has been that's part of the old system, but there was not enough flexibility to do it today. So you had the code, you had the screen, but it just didn't work too well.
Right. Well, I know it didn't work.
I mean, that's it. In layman's terms, this is taking a 25-year-old system mm-hmm. and getting us into 2013.
Yeah.
Both from a registry standpoint, bringing us up to date online, easing the pain of administration that goes along with it. From an award standpoint, being able to do reports and run analysis and understand where the fund is at when we have a budget and what the awards are forecasted for the rest of the year. If we needed to change rates, not change rates, see where horses are winning awards. In my opinion, those are necessities of the core fund business. And the ability to actually write the checks and get people the money that's owed to them in a transparent fashion mm-hmm. that could technically, I mean, the state of Pennsylvania actually publishes on their website the awards based on horse, based on breeder, based on stallion. I mean, that information is available to people to see and use. And you can sort and use the data that's there. I mean, technically, we could take it to that, you know, we can go wherever we want. We just need to update.
We're building it
from the ground up in 2013 fashion versus 1988.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 88 was the first design document that I found.
And, I mean, you know, the internet wasn't even used then. And so that's my two cents on it. I think I got a few comments, and I think John has some of the same ones, too, right. Maybe.
Well, no, couple questions, mm-hmm. really money questions.
Yes.
Let's, you know, get to the chase. The initial phase, mm-hmm. two questions. What do you estimate your cost to be? And secondly, what do you estimate the internal resources that need to be dedicated to that, meaning staff, board?
For the creation of the plan?
Yeah, the plan, creating the plan.
I would say there's probably easily a couple, three, 4 weeks of dedicated time that would be needed. So let's say 160 hours
of staff time.
Of staff time total. Don't know, we had the conversation earlier about the IT time. Again, that is really just to make sure that anything we propose falls within the purview of the IT group to say, yes, you can do that. And I'm hoping they have the expertise or the knowledge to say, from a regulatory standpoint, is there any issues about keeping personal information that we have to make sure are followed? So we don't say, yeah, let's put it on a server out in the internet and don't worry about the fact that there are social security numbers and things like that out there. There may or may not be that concern. We just want to make sure that we cover it to make sure we don't do something that the state doesn't want to have happen to its information.
Okay,
here's
the real question.
Yes.
Now, listen, we would need to budget, if we would have to budget money for this, which we need to do.
Yes.
What would we budget for the planning session, both to your fees and internal?
Well, our fees are covered in the 50K, so we're covered there. It really is a matter of what time the staff is available for us. So one of our steps would be to lay out the game plan of when we would first meet, what kinds of questions we would have. And prior actually to the first meeting is really, again, looking at Appendix A, which is the back of this, is there anything else? Because these are the items that we're going to start with as far as determining what we have to have and what would be nice to have.
There's no finance. There's that $50,000 isn't in. We don't have that documented anywhere right now in front of us, do we?
Yeah.
Like how that? How does it come?
It's on the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Jeff. Oh, it's in the agenda. No, but in terms of from the jockey club.
No,
there's no breakout of.
No, it was the way it was broken out was again we took this document. It was given to a couple of our project managers to review the scope of it, and that time was based on that. Now, again, the wild card is Appendix A. It may be substantially less if the items in Appendix A are not implemented, or if you look at them and say, no, it really just needs to do this and a little bit of this.
Right. So this so the $50,000, I just want to make this clear for the board, the $50,000 that we're talking about is essentially to get us, in, the delivery is a document of what the requirements are.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's going to be a second check cost to build it.
To build it, yes.
Which,
but at that point, the document also, part of that deliverable, is our estimate or our judgment of what it will take hour-wise to produce what we've just documented.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff, you brought the point that what Pennsylvania has, right? Did you guys build Pennsylvania?
We did not build Pennsylvania, but we do have some connections with what Pennsylvania does.
Okay. Knowing that, is it possible that if we like another system that somebody else has,
yes,
we buy that system and build on that?
Absolutely. One of the decisions has to be done.
Financial cost.
One of the decisions is always build or buy. And but one of the steps you have to get to is what do you want? What does it have to do to satisfy your requirements? That's why I'm saying this first step is to determine what it is that you want it to do. Then it's appropriate to say it's going to cost X number of hours to build this thing. Is Pennsylvania doing 70% of what we want, and can we buy that for a lot less than X number of dollars? But that's a decision point that once you know what you want, you can then say, well, let's look around because we know it's going to be some number of hours to build what we want. Yeah.
The reason I brought that up, we were a pilot at the Liquor Authority. We were a pilot for the state. We had 14 states buy our system.
Okay.
And we went on, if I remember right, it was close to 11 months that we went on, and we thought we were going to be nickel and dime, and we weren't. It came out pretty well.
We've had experience with trying to look at a single system to that would be used by a lot of people. New York is rather unique in the sense that it has an ownership registry. That was done by the Jockey Club. They maintain that database. Other states didn't care, although it was designed initially to be used by as many states as wanted to. They didn't want to. We've also been involved in the Racing Commissioners International and the potential of creating a system for that group that could then be used. But in looking at the requirements of each of the states, it didn't prove feasible that you could build one system that could be used by everyone. That's not to say you couldn't build a system that could be used by a couple, but they were looking for the advantage of having X number of people pay for it.
Kyle, do you have a question?
No, John, I had the questions that John raised, so thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim.
You're welcome, sir. And I can either leave or stay. It's up to you. I'm not sure.
Unless the board objects, you're certainly welcome to stay.
I do have to leave shortly with a plane. I can stay a few more minutes in case anyone has any other questions.
I have a question. Okay. $50,000 before we even get into the system part. Where are we going to get the money? I mean, do we have it budgeted? Do we have?
Well, you know, we get when we budget for administrative spending, we get we put down the amount that is equivalent to 5% of the revenue. That doesn't mean every dollar is marked to be spent. Usually when we have leftover money, it just goes back and goes out to awards and supplemental payments.
I do have a question, actually. You were talking about the end of the year would be doable for to lay out the plan.
Yes.
And that's presuming a start date of when?
I would say in the next month.
Okay. Because we have...
You good?
Mm-hmm. I just want to ask you a question.
Okay.
What did anybody else have a question?
Oh, go ahead.
Now, this would all come out of the administrative budget, or would part of this be promotional? I mean, how would we? This doesn't have anything to do with the software at all. This strictly is a housekeeping.
Well, we usually split things 70-30.
So how would you split it? 30% promotional, 70 admin?
Yeah.
That's a significant amount of money.
We would prorate that over, say, a 12-year period, and then split it 70-30 admin. We would amortize it over time.
So you'd amortize, but we would split it as part of our budget here.
Mm-hmm.
70-30.
All right. Are there any more questions, comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to...
Can I make a suggestion that we go into executive session to discuss that?
That's a good idea, because there's other issues that I think were raised that probably could be better.
Okay. Somebody want to make a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Copies back, please.
Howard, do we have that copy?
Yes.
Yep. Thank you.